This is Shepard Fairey, and you're listening to The Dakan Show.
Yo, check it out. A whole new generation of young people today who belong nowhere.
But I prefer to be now cast.
Third culture kids, where the concept of the Dakan is the corner shop or the top shop.
We are live outside. Hey, yo, what's up, people?
What up, nation?
It's a revolution of expression.
You're tuned into The Dakan Show. Stay tuned in.
Arab digital generation is shaping their identity, their creative expression, and their future. So please give a very warm welcome.
The Dakan.
Welcome to your tribe.
Yeah, great. So we're recording on both. So I made sure the gains and levels are good. So to give you a quick brief about our show, since we're here early, Dakan literally means a bodega. So it's like we're kicking it by the bodega stoop and we, you know, just have a chat. We obviously came prepped with a few questions. It's uncensored. Feel free to express yourself as in any way you'd like.
It's
sort of part of my natural way of speaking. And last night when I, you know, said bullshit and this and that, I thought, uh-oh, I hope I'm not offending anyone here. It's just that to me that, you know, it's just hard to control.
Yeah.
You know, when I do a radio interview and I know that I can't swear, I'm more...
It sort of goes away. The swear word goes somewhere else. But yeah. Our show, luckily, gives you all the freedom. And
okay.
I think
great,
that was
great.
One of the things when we've spoken. Mayor says hello, by the way. Carlos has said hello to you
nice.
Through the entire community. He's sent his love. And one of the things he said he reminds us about is making space. So our show is very much about taking space and making space. And I guess my first question is prefaced by... Artists in the UAE are censored. We self-censor. We've lived in an environment. We've only just begun to realize, okay, maybe we can say what we need to say, but very few spaces, as you've experienced, are owned by us, by the artist.
Right.
So how, I guess just advice, how would you imagine we can navigate this? Do you have any advice? Because you've been through this.
Well, you know... When I was younger, I always thought that pushing back against the status quo with very provocative defiance was a better representation of authenticity or integrity. But what I've realized as I've gotten older, and I think I've gotten smarter about understanding how to work both outside and inside the system, I've realized that most change is very incremental. And if you can't move that small amount, then you don't get to the big amount eventually. And so when so many people are driven by fear, it's really important to try to find ways to move things in the direction you want without creating a fear that's going to be counterproductive. And so challenging people with ideas is something I want to do with my work all the time. But sometimes I want someone to feel that what I'm doing is inviting or seductive and or beautiful, any number of things that draws in a viewer. And then when they are starting to digest some of the details, it's too late. They've got something that they have to chew on in the mix as well. When it comes to how to deal with a place like this, I think that using diplomacy to warm all the bureaucrats up to the value of creative culture and expression, it actually ends up making people happier. It's good societal therapy.
Yes.
And so when you this is my opinion. I'm quite biased towards art, obviously, and all the strengths and benefits to society of art, but I really think when people have creative outlets in what they make and what they consume, they tend to have less pent up aggression and rage over powerlessness, and feel a better connection to their fellow human beings. And that's part of the problem is tribalism is mostly based on superficiality, and whether I'm talking about what's going on in U.S. politics right now or probably any number of the things here that I'm not qualified to comment on. if you can figure out how to get past those superficial barriers, you can really make headway. So this is not that I've become more of a compromiser in my old age. It's because I've become more of a tactician.
Absolutely. And I think we need, so we're sitting in the hotbed right now in the Middle East where the revolutions that we've seen on the news in the past 3, 4, 5 years have been revolutions by the youth demanding the future that they are owed. And so when I hear that, I'm like, yes, we need to be more tactful and tactile in our approach. And art could possibly solve that, you know?
Well, our art does help to create a conversation that might not happen. I think that there's a lot of different forms of media that make people just dig their heels in and get defensive and hostile. And art sometimes can get through. And so I'm not saying it's always the magic ingredient, but I definitely think it can be an important ingredient. And it's what I do for a living. It's what I do for fun. It's my whole life, really. Art, right. Like that's what I spend all my time doing. But it's not the only, aesthetics aren't the only thing I'm interested in. I'm interested in a lot of what's going on socially and politically in the world. And so the way that, say, a band or, a hip hop group or Bob Marley might weave in some of their social commentary and their beliefs, that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to make it all a very accessible, relatable package that people can see how you can have escapism and engagement all in one program and a healthy balance of the two. There's a dichotomy or a relationship that allows people to feel like as they tackle the problems in the world, it doesn't have to just be a chore. It can actually be blended with something really joyful and creative. So that's what I'm going for.
Definitely. I think we do see that quite a lot as a form of expression in this part of the world because, as what Reem was saying earlier, what people are fighting for is just basic human rights, the right to go to school, the right for education, to live safely. And, to that, in some ways it's escapism because that's where you go to express yourself. And in other ways, it's a commentary on what's happening. You're trying to shed light on and educate other cultures or the communities or the nation or even internationally at large to let them know what's happening in these spaces. And that's something, that's why we make space and we have this open door policy of we try to showcase and bring as many people through our doors as possible to talk about these pieces. And I think for a lot of the Arab kids and the BIPOC community of the Middle East, there's a challenge of dismissiveness sometimes because, unlike I think in the US where concepts, narratives like racism are necessary and are being had and everybody acknowledges its history, here sometimes that is dismissed. Like, no, we're, that doesn't happen. We're not racist. So I think in a way what I'm trying to come to is how can these kids find a different way to capture people's attention to have these conversations? What kind of advice would you have for them in the way they express themselves?
Well, sometimes I do think it's important to call out villains and whether, that's abuse of authority or racist, that acknowledging that there's a problem is important. But one of the things I've noticed is that when people feel defensive, they're far less likely to change their mindset. So what I've been really striving for with a lot of my work, and you can probably see it around this gallery, is taking a group that's been, pushed to the margins frequently or disempowered in some way, disparaged in some way, and presenting them with an undeniable humanity and dignity that allows the person who's narrow-minded to, or allows or forces the person that's narrow-minded to see them as equal and to see them as relatable. And I think that it's a balance between finding a door in emotionally and then hitting people with some of the intellectual side of the argument that's persuasive. And I use portraiture, but I also use statistics about people of color, the rate at which they're killed by the police when unarmed, incarcerated, the bias in media portrayals, that sort of thing I'll weave in, but I know that that can't be the first thing. It has to be something that once somebody already feels emotionally invested in the piece and it's going to be hard for them to throw that away, then they get to the other stuff. But, you know, I mean, one thing that I think is important for me to say is that I'm going through all this stuff, with trial and error. I'm not I don't claim to be a psychologist or an expert on anything. I feel like I've gotten to know aspects of how people are from one place to another. And then sometimes the specific idiosyncrasies that are in a place. I'm always trying to learn and make sure that when I'm addressing these things, I'm not doing it clumsily or recklessly. But part of it is that, creators have to have the courage to do what they believe. And then if it's not exactly right, to then course correct and keep going and have the courage to keep going. Because a lot of people, when they get attacked for putting what they believe in out in the world, then they just don't want to do it anymore because it's too painful. Right. But really, what I've tried to convince myself and other people is that a lot of times when people they're feeling guilty about being complacent or apathetic about injustice in the world, their reaction is to try to attack the messenger that's saying there needs to be more consciousness, that's forcing them to address their own conscience and their own guilt. And so that says more, the reaction says more about the viewer than it does about the creator. So I applaud anyone who has, the courage to be vulnerable by expressing their ideas and then, putting it out there and dealing with how people react.
It's the ultimate rejection in some ways, but it's the remedy that we need. You know, it's the remedy and it's the balm that we need to figure things out, right? A career like yours, one in billions. I don't think that, there are many other artists that I know that I've grown up with that I look at and I say, no, this has been impactful. The work has been impactful through... I'll look at some of the Andre the Giant work and think of I feel my teen angst kind of rising. I'm like, there she is. And, the women you put women in your work so often that I found likenesses that were not like me, but I found revolution in them. So I guess a young, really young me wants to thank you for that because I don't think I was walking in the streets of Toronto and I would see it and I'm like, oh, there she is. There she is. A gentle reminder to just never, never, ever concede. A career like yours, when we hopefully get to that space, what matters now? What matters to you? What are you afraid of?
Oh, I'm afraid of a lot of things. I'm just as insecure as anyone. But I'll tell you, when people ask me about fear and insecurity, what I think of is I think sure, I'm always afraid that all these things I believe in will not manifest in the way I want, or that, as a species, we're not on the right path and I can't do enough. But But for all of that, I remain, you know, and all the dark things that happen in the world, I remain optimistic that every action matters. And you know, the ability to just be, you know, be resilient within a very chaotic world and to keep making things, that's reassuring for me. I've figured out how to make art my therapy and my tool. So, and I mean, it's miraculous to me that I make a very good living making art, because I never thought that would be possible. But that's empowered me to use some of the money I make and my megaphone to shine light on things I think are, important that people aren't paying enough attention to. And when I think about how power and capital work, I wish more people with my mindset had those resources. So sometimes it hurts my feelings a lot when people say, that guy, he's just a rich guy. I'm a successful business person that re-channels my resources into things that I think are really important, not just for me, but for the world or for the person that I was 25 years ago when I was broke and didn't have opportunities. So, you know, all of that is driving me, and how a lot of my ideas will look visually is always changing, because I'm learning new things. New things are happening in the news cycle. So there's about five themes that I'm dealing with. Racism, sexism, xenophobia, abuse of authority, respect for the environment, the need for democracy to function better. And yet, for those few things, and love, art, empowerment. I mean, there's, peace. So maybe there's seven themes. But anyway, they are manifested in many, many different ways in different pieces. And yet I think all of my work is recognizably mine. Yeah. But it's that challenge of sort of, I called the show Future Mosaic, of continuing to build out the mosaic, mm-hmm. where it's recognizable as a whole picture, as well as each tile being recognizable. And I mean, I couldn't be more fortunate to have the personal liberty to, be creative for a living and earn enough money to take good care of my family. There's not really much more I could ask for other than for some of the people that I reach with my art to actually open their hearts and their eyes to what I'm trying to say. And instead of just treating it as a commodity, actually maybe share in some of the vision and some of the effort.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Definitely. Absolutely. I think that's wonderfully said. So we had a bunch of questions from earlier as well. Talking about conspicuously consumptive as well. As a form of dissent, how do you tackle tension between being an artist that reflects the cultural zeitgeist and also the commodification of your art? Like, there's a very interesting, beautiful tension and dance in there as well.
Yeah. I was in college when I realized that as much as I thought that a lot of trend-driven consumer culture was silly, that it's the language a lot of people speak. And so when I did the original Andre the Giant Has a Posse campaign, and I wrote my manifesto for one of my college classes, some people read it and they said, this is a really interesting concept. You should apply for a grant to try to scale this scale this concept. And I listened to that advice, and then I thought, what's actually a more authentic materialization of this concept? It's if people like it enough to part with a few bucks for a t-shirt or a sticker, because to them, if they're willing to spend money on a signifier, that's actually, that shows it matters to them. And it's not, that's not me trying to justify selling stuff. It was just me really understanding how even my punk rock and skateboard friends, a new skateboard video comes right. out, a new shoe drops from somebody, and people are like, that is how I show people this is the culture I care about. And yep. they wouldn't ever consider it, you know, I'm a label whore or I'm, you know, or I'm trendy, because this is cool counterculture stuff. That doesn't count the same, but really it is all the same. But I figured that, okay, if I can participate in and critique aspects of capitalism simultaneously and try to do it in a way that that doesn't look hypocritical and makes people think, you know, that's really the best I can do, because this is the system that we live in. And so I've made images about conspicuous consumption that when I sell them, and it says in the release, I understand that it's ironic or seems contradictory or hypocritical that I'm selling this. If you are only buying this as a trophy or something that you think makes you look cool, reconsider. Consider spending your money on something that's more genuinely meaningful. If you find it genuinely meaningful and it's a message that you want to share with other people, okay, I buy it. But think twice. Don't just don't just buy it without thinking. And yet I still, of course, even with that sort of qualification, I get attacked. But it's and then when I put something up that is a street art piece or something that is an older painting that's no longer available, people get really mad at me because they can't buy it. Yeah. And so there's the, you know, yeah. When you look at the world, it's quite complicated. And sometimes these contradictions exist within people. Somebody that's like, that guy's a sellout. It's like, oh, wait, but I'd like to buy that one print. Why won't he allow me to buy it? You know? And so I'm navigating all that and trying to just articulate the complexities of it in a lot of what I'm doing. And, you know, as Victoria knows very well, always finding ways that there's an integrated connection between the topics I'm talking about and where some of the money is going. Right. So if I'm talking about campaign finance reform, then there's an organization for that. Climate change or environmental protection, I have about 3 or 4 different organizations I work with. Racism, I've worked with Black Lives Matter, the Southern Poverty Law Center, who else?
Souls, I mean, a lot. To the Polls.
Yeah, Souls to the Polls. A lot of, oh yeah, mm-hmm. ACLU's Immigrant Rights Program. I know that if somebody buys a print and they're only doing it because they think they can make money flipping it on eBay, or they just like the aesthetics and they don't care about the cause, at least their money, whether they intend it or not, is actually going to the cause.
So it's actually contributing
a portion of it. And I can hope that even if they were not genuine at that stage, that actually, you know, over time there can be an osmosis, that the ideas slowly sink in. And so I hope that. I mean, I know it works because I've had enough people say, like, yeah, you know, in high school I got into your stuff because it was like, you know, the fly gear, the dope or whatever. But then, like, I actually started to look at more of what you were doing, and now I'm really into the ideas in your art. And I'm like, that's amazing. Because otherwise, you know, there's a zillion different clothing brands and they, you know, they could get any of them. And not that I have anything against Tommy Hilfiger, but is that going to actually make them think about some of these social and political issues the way, you know, the way that my brand can, you know, lead somebody into that conversation. So, I try to, I, yeah, I'm trying to find ways to reconcile all these things, and it's not always easy. And yeah. You know, stuff like the fair labor. You know, we work with a lot of fair trade factories with my clothing line, and it means that some of the garments are a little bit more. We also do a lot of sustainable cotton with no chemicals, and yet a lot of the retailers are like, yeah, we don't want that because there's no market for it. So asking them to take some of the stuff that where, you know, there is a clear ethical effort beyond what most clothing brands do, to see whether their consumers, if given the opportunity to make it, you know, make that choice, will choose that. And then often they're pleasantly surprised. They're like, oh, it actually made a real big difference to people. But it takes a lot of work because, you know, the people don't understand how, you know, it woven into the retail system, a lot of bad ideas are.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're preaching to the choir. I feel like it's one of those things we constantly deal with because, thankfully, the work that we have done over the past few years, we sit at this right on the edge between business and culture and trying to really understand how to connect them together and what are the ways that actually benefits. So, you know, you were talking about skateboard culture and hip hop culture and obviously street art as well. And what are the roles that it all plays together? We're like, how do you get them to think differently or look at the world in a different way and understand macro issues as much as micro issues? And, you know, understanding that, you know what, we're not just going to take this to sell more sneakers, but actually there's a statement there, a sociopolitical, a socioeconomical, something that is brewing that needs to be, that have light shed on it. And we do our best to constantly, you know, we're using that as a megaphone and we're trying to hold the light at the same time to showcase what's going on and around the world, in the world around us.
But, you know, I think it's nothing to be apologizing about to say that people are, you know, people like to feel happy with the coolness of what they're wearing, how they're presenting themselves, and that doesn't make them bad people. It's just that you can actually bring something deeper into that mix as well. And, you know, people are multidimensional, multifaceted. So what I'm always looking for is sort of ways to combine all of it so that it you know, it's healthier.
Yeah.
And, rather than being dismissive of people who don't think about all these issues in the same way I do, I'm trying to find every avenue to bring them in.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things where, yes, it's cool and it's attractive, but there's a deeper narrative and a larger purpose behind it. And that's what we try to shed light to.
Yeah, well, that's great.
Yeah. One last question.
We keep saying that.
I know. This is finally the last question. What high school did you go to?
Well, I went to three high schools.
Right.
I went to a very preppy, conservative private school called Porter Gaud in Charleston, South Carolina, which is the same school that Stephen Colbert went to.
Yeah.
Then I did public school for 2 years in Charleston, which I really liked, but my parents didn't. And then I did a year of art boarding school in Idlewild, California, which is about 2 hours outside of LA. And the art school experience was life-changing for me.
Yeah.
Because my teachers, both my academic teachers and my art teachers, treated me like a peer with less experience rather than a subordinate.
Yes.
And I'd never been treated like that by any teachers. And I flourished in that environment because I felt like I didn't have an adversarial relationship.
Your voice mattered.
Yeah, exactly.
That you had one and that had a seat at the table.
So, I'm glad I have the perspective of all three of those schools. And Yeah, you know, there was a lot of struggle with my parents when I was in high school, a lot of battles with my parents, but ultimately things worked out okay.
So that's how you make a shepherd fairy, I guess. You put him in, you know what I mean? You put him in school where a political ground can be formed, a political, yeah. you know, opinion can be made. Public school, so you know where the feelings are, where yeah, yeah. what happens when you don't care about, you know, why every business needs a triple bottom line.
Yeah, yeah.
And then finally an art school to give you a voice and be unafraid to unequivocally own that voice. And that's, thank you very much. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for kicking it with us today. I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode as much as we enjoyed creating it for you. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast at to stay up to date with all our conversations. Also, if you don't mind, hit us with the 5-star rating, leave a comment, let us know how you feel about the show. That way, it could also help others find the show. And be sure to share it with your friends and family, whoever you think can benefit from it. You can holler at us on all social media platforms at The Can Show. We'd love to hear from you. Or you could drop us an email to hello@thecanmedia.com. Salam.